Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the May 2025 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by continuing The Shortwave Listener by Fred Waterer. Portuguese on shortwave, classic rock, and BBC Fair for May. May 24th, The Hermit's Cave Radio Show, The House with a Past, 1937. May 31, Suspense Radio Show, The Hitchhiker, 1942. You can hear the Radio Mystery Theater, prepared by Reverend Martin Dawson of Prince Edward Island, Canada, on Saturdays at 1300 UTC on 15,770 kHz, and repeated at 11 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday, 0300 UTC Sunday, on 9,395 kHz, and on Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC, on 5,950 kHz, WRMI Facebook page. We play the greatest hits of all time, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, on 5,050 kHz, until 12 a.m. Eastern Time, and then we switch to 9,455 kHz from 12 a.m. until 2 a.m. Eastern Time with the WRMI Legends Dream Team. Jeff Clark, Monday. Dave Mason, Tuesday. Ted Randall, Wednesday. Dan Collins, Thursday. Steve Hunter, Friday. Jeff Lawrence, Saturday. WRMI Legends can be heard at other times on the WRMI schedule. Check the listings. I love some good old rock and roll. Texas Radio Shortwave Program Schedule for May. Music of the Josh Abbott Band. May 3rd, 1500, 6070, Europe. May 4th, 0100, 9670, North America. 1200, 9670, Europe. 2300, 9670, North America. May 2025 will mark the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II. It is to be expected that there will be more than a few programs related to this anniversary. The first of these is a BBC World Service program called Defeated. The program is part of the documentary and aired on April 19th at 12:06 and on April 20th at 03:06. Check the BBC World Service website when you read this. It will just have aired. It looks like an interesting program. Defeated. 8 May 1945 was a day of rejoicing in Britain, the U.S., and many other countries. Germany had surrendered, and World War II was over, at least in Europe. Yet it was not a day of celebration for everyone. For the vanquished Germans, it marked the end of bombings and of Nazi rule. But it was also a time of deprivation and chaos, fear and soul-searching. Millions of ethnic Germans had fled their homes to escape the approaching Red Army. In this documentary, Laura Wolfson, whose own father grew up under Nazi rule, unfolds, through their memoirs and diaries, the stories of six Germans who lived through that extraordinary time. Among others, we hear from Siegbert Stumpke, a 12-year-old schoolboy who was used as a runner by the German Wehrmacht in the final days of the war. Laura Erich, a young mother from East Prussia, now Poland, who had to flee with two small children across a frozen lagoon. Hans Rosenthal, who was Jewish and had survived the Holocaust, hidden in a Berlin allotment colony before very nearly getting shot by the Soviet liberators. Melita Moschman, who got hooked on Nazi ideology aged 15, became a youth leader and took years to acknowledge her share of the responsibility for the crimes committed by the National Socialists. I grew up with many stories of this time. My parents had me quite late in life, in their 40s, so they had very vivid memories of VE Day. As a result, I can almost feel like I was there. My uncle Percy was ground crew for Canadian Lancaster bombers. My uncle Hank was patrolling the English Channel in a motor torpedo boat. And my namesake Uncle Fred was fighting in Holland as hostilities came to an end. All three came home and lived long lives into the 1980s and 90s. Not all families were that fortunate. The end of the war brings a mix of joy and loss. 80 years on, perhaps the anniversaries will not be as big a deal as they once were. We shall see. World Service Programming. All of these programs will be archived for later listening, all times UTC. People Fixing the World. Myra Anubi is joined by BBC Access All presenter Emma Tracy to look at new technologies that could help blind people in their everyday lives. Glide is a new mobility aid. It's a device with wheels and cameras that aims to provide blind people with an alternative to white canes and guide dogs, while using AI to give them more information about their surroundings. Emma tries the gadget out in Los Angeles. She also looks at a device that is much simpler, but in its own way revolutionary. The Braille Doodle is a tactile tablet that makes it easy for blind children to learn Braille, create art, and understand graphs and diagrams. Tuesday, 22 April, 0800. Witness History. An 18-second clip of a young man in front of an elephant enclosure at San Diego Zoo in California, describing their really long trunks, was the first video to be posted onto YouTube in April 2005. It was uploaded by co-founder Jawed Karim, who, with friends Chad Hurley and Steve Chen, while working together at PayPal, cooked up the idea for the video sharing service. 20 years later, it is now available in 100 countries and has almost 3 billion users around the world. Tuesday, 22 April, 0850. Assignment. A canceled election, a canceled candidate, and a divided country. Is Romania's democracy under threat? Last December, the country's constitutional court canceled the presidential election 2 days before the final vote, citing outside interference, with the nationalist pro-Putin candidate Galin Georgescu riding high in the polls. An outsider and a TikTok sensation, Georgescu's anti-EU and anti-NATO message resonated with an unhappy electorate. His sudden success was unprecedented, as was the cancellation of a European democratic election. The political establishment claim that cyber warfare and Russian interference gave them no choice. Georgescu has now been eliminated from May's presidential rerun. Tessa Dunlop asks how this happened, why it matters, and what next for this strategically important country on the eastern edge of the EU and NATO. Tuesday, 22 April, 0930. Heart and Soul. Sacred Harp pioneer and former punk frontman Tim Erickson takes us into the hair-raising sound of shape note singing, an American choral tradition experiencing a resurgence across the U.S. and in Europe. As a new edition of the songbook approaches publication, Tim explores why this music is drawing more singers and how it's managing to remain inclusive despite increasing political polarization in the wider culture. Sacred Harp is sung a cappella in four-part harmony, a non-performative music where everyone takes a turn to lead, and groups gather anywhere, from churches to community centers and pubs. Songs were first published in a book of Psalms in the state of Georgia in 1844, and in 2025, a new edition will publish a record number of compositions submitted by sacred harp singers from all over the world. For Tim Erickson, this is devotional music, but it will mean different things to different people. What's special about it is the way it transcends differences. Sociologist Laura Clausen tells us how the forebearers of the music stipulated that religion and politics should not come into the hollow square. Historically, the sacred harp community has continued to sing and build bonds through chapters of political polarization in the U.S. But how have recent political divides affected the community, and how can it continue to remain an inclusive space? Friday, 25 April, 11:30. Crowd science. Can modern farming be planet-friendly while also providing for the food needs of a growing population? In a special edition of Crowd Science from Nairobi, Kenya, we explore a host of audience questions about sustainable agriculture. Friday, 25 April, 08:30. An image accompanying the article shows a sandy ocean beach with two palm trees. One palm tree is part of the letter W in the text WRMI Legends, WRMILegends.com. The caption reads, "Rockin' your shortwave set on WRMI with the Legends Dream Team of DJs, courtesy WRMI." Next, Radio 101 by Ken Reitz, KS4CR. KS4CR, numeral 1 at gmail.com. FM reception on big wire antennas. The article starts with three images next to each other. The left image shows a multi-element antenna on a mast. The middle image shows a forest of trees with a wire antenna suspended from the trees. The right image shows a wire antenna suspended from a tree branch. The caption reads, "Left, the diminutive Antennas Direct Element VHF UHF antenna, $70 from Antennas Direct, with a Winnegard LNA200 Boost XT antenna preamp, $50 at Amazon.com. On an RCA rotator, $80 from Amazon.com, at about 30 feet. A total cost of $220, including 50 feet of RG6 coax. The preamp is broadband from VHF low to UHF frequencies and does not have an FM trap, an important thing to consider when buying a preamp for FM reception. How does it stack up against my HF horizontal loop? Center. Glinting in the sun. This is part of a 500-foot-long wire antenna, laid out in an east-west orientation at a height of about 8 feet above the ground. Not the recommended design for a VHF-FM antenna. How does it perform at FM frequencies? Right. 30 feet up in an oak tree, a balun joins the ends of an 800-foot horizontal loop made of aluminum electric fence wire, and feeds the coax that runs 100 feet into the house. This is an incredibly cheap antenna, $70 for a quarter-mile roll of aluminum fence wire, $55 for the balun, considering its capabilities. I use this omnidirectional antenna for shortwave listening and AMDX, as well as working DX on the ham bands. But how well does it work on the FM broadcast band compared to the FM Yagi on a rotator? KS4ZR photo. Now to the text. Over the decades, I've assembled, erected, combined, and built many antennas designed to receive everyday distant FM radio signals. This started back in the 1970s, long before internet radio, satellite radio, or the proliferation of FM translators and boosters, currently cramming the FM band nationwide. According to FCC records, in 1999, there were a total of 10,891 commercial FM, non-commercial FM, and FM translators and boosters on the air across the U.S. Today, that number is just under 22,000. In the old days, it was possible, with a decent-sized Radio Shack VHF TV antenna with a preamp and rotator, to routinely receive FM stations from Washington, D.C., some 80 miles to the north, or Norfolk, Virginia, about 125 miles to the east, Harrisonburg, Virginia, some 60 miles across the mountains to the west, or Roanoke, Virginia, over 100 miles to the southwest. I'm not talking about FM skip, just routine everyday reception. The proliferation of FM transmitters on the air has benefited all stations' ability to have a presence in markets that previously had few FM stations, which is great for those living in those markets, but not so great for those of us wanting everyday long-distance FM reception. Since that time, I have embarked on dozens of FM antenna projects in an effort to reclaim everyday FM DX. These projects have included simple wire dipoles cut to the FM band, homebrew turnstile FM antennas cut for the FM band, store-bought FM Yagis, stacked store-bought FM Yagis, store-bought FM log periodic dipole arrays with and without preamplifiers and on or off rotators. I've even built a massive 6-Yagi 24-element array on a 14-foot boom that's languishing on the ground for lack of a bucket truck to get it in the air. The one thing I've never tried is hooking up an FM radio to my 800-foot horizontal HF loop, used for shortwave listening and amateur operating, or the beverage-style long-wire antennas, one at over 500 feet, the other at over 700 feet, stretched out into the woods at a height of only 8 feet in various directions, used for AMDX. I began to wonder, how would these antennas play at VHF frequencies? The FM receiver. The project started out as a survey of AM and FM stations, receivable from my location, that were broadcasting using the digital HT radio format that allows multiple program channels on the same frequency on the FM band. The FCC does not allow multiple program channels for HD radio stations broadcasting on the AM band. The receiver I'm using is a Spark SHD T750 AM-FM HD, which I reviewed in this column for the November 2020 issue of TSM. It's unfortunate that the radio is no longer made. I couldn't even locate one in used condition on eBay. After reviewing virtually all HD radio sets in this and other magazines, dating back to the inception of HD radio some 20 years ago, I believe that the SHD T750 was the best tabletop AM-FM HD radio made during that brief period when such radios were produced. It's a very sensitive receiver on FM, with excellent rejection of adjacent channels. It features better-than-average audio through two high-fidelity speakers, an easy-to-see signal strength indicator, a full-color, six-line graphics-capable display, rear-mounted 75-ohm FM coax antenna input, a 3mm AM antenna input, 3mm auxiliary input jack, a front-mounted 3mm stereo headphone jack, front-mounted up-down tuning buttons and memory presets. It tunes down to 87.5 MHz and uses a 12-volt power supply, so it could easily be powered off a car battery. There is no other tabletop HD radio receiver currently offered that has these features. The antennas. I use an MFJ1704 four-position antenna switch. MFJ. Yes, they're still around. Indicated they had only 8 left, which they are selling for $130 each, to which I have attached 2 long wire antennas at a height of about 8 feet, one laid out in an east-west direction, and one laid out in a southwest-northeast direction. One HF loop, 800 feet around at 30 feet high, and one small VHF-UHF element antenna, $70 at Antennas Direct, mounted on a rotator at about 30 feet with a Winnegard LNA200 Boost XT antenna preamp, $50. Two images on this page show first the MFJ antenna switch. It has antenna cables connected to it. They're labeled east-west, northeast, southwest, beam, and loop. The caption reads, MFJ1074 four-position antenna switch allows switching between 2 long wire antennas at a height of 8 feet, or the horizontal HF loop at 30 feet, or the antenna's direct VHF-UHF preamped antenna on a rotator at about 30 feet. Which antenna operates best as an FM antenna? It depends. KS4ZR photo. The other image on this page shows the display of the Spark radio. The display shows VPM NPR Music, WWLB FM Jazz from WFMT Network. The caption reads, thanks to digital HD radio, duplication of programming is all over the FM band. Here, a local NPR station programs classical and jazz from the WFMT network, originating from Chicago and broadcast in Richmond on WWLB-FM 5200 watts on 93.1 MHz, but also on HD Radio 2 on WCVE-FM, a 10 kilowatt station on 88.9 MHz. Reception is on the Spark SHD T750 AM-FM HD receiver, which, unlike HD radio sets on offer today, features a full-color and graphics-capable display, KS4ZR photo. Back to the text. All antenna lead-ins use RG6 coax. The output from the switch goes to a short cable outfitted with a PL259 to 75 ohm adapter that plugs into the Spark FM antenna jack. As you might appreciate, the big horizontal loop has a lot of gain and is omnidirectional, so stations can come in from any direction if there's not a strong enough signal to engage FM's capture effect. The FM Yagi is directional and can be moved to help increase signal strength. The 2 long wire antennas are stationary, but clearly exhibited gain in the direction in which their ends are pointed. Notes about FM. The FM band is populated by stations with an almost innumerable combination of power output, transmitting antenna height, and pattern. Yes, just like AM stations, FM stations must protect against interfering with other stations in other markets on the same frequency. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.